So is anyone an uncle or an aunt? Anyone an uncle or aunt? Right? You try to be good uncle, try to be a good aunt. But those kids have a lot of energy. They got a lot of energy, kids. So I was giving my niece little horsey rides, and I was trying to go around on just the carpet, right? And my niece is like, no, that way. I'm like, the hardwood floors. So I'm going on my hands and knees with the hardwood floors. I'm like, man, you got to pay for Uncle Eric's fucking knee surgery after this. And faster that way, over the cobblestone, and giddy up. I'm like, this bitch.
Well, do what you gotta do.
Welcome to Highway Diary. Well, I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Matt Nacimedo.
What's going on, man?
Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
Nacimedo. Mento.
Yeah.
I also have a really aggressive New Jersey accent.
Nice.
Good to see you. I said, hey, come down to Trenton. Yeah, right at the City Hall building. We did some comedy. How'd you feel out there?
I enjoyed it, man. It was cool. Just like being around. I miss the smell of weed. I haven't smoked weed in like almost 4.5 months or somewhere in that general time frame. So it was just nice to be around, you know, the smell. The people were cool. You know, it was just like a fun, nice little low key. I haven't really done much stand up outside of like the Brighton and just like the general Jersey Shore area. And by that, I basically mean, you know, like the Brighton and like the arcade mic that Angela hosts in Del Mar.
I know. And like the old glory was taken from us.
Dude, that place was awesome. I loved everything that, like, you know, because everyone was like hanging outside, you know, and if you go downstairs, like the whole place was packed up. Like, you know, people like hanging off the rafters, chilling on the stairs, and, you know, just like it was an awesome time. So I definitely look forward to being able to have that, you know, just like a packed room. Especially for an open mic, too, man. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, there was some book show elements to Old Glory. I feel like it went back and forth. It was a book show, then the open mic, then the book show, then the open mic. But, you know, it was also The Hang. That's where we met, I believe. I think that's where we met.
And I think the first time we met, or the first time I remember, at least, was at the Stress Factory.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's right.
I remember it was, like, one of the first times I'd ever done the Jar Jar bit. And you were really nice. You came up to me, and you were like, that was a really good bit, but, you know, it was something along the line, like, I took it as a very, like, genuine, you know, like, note, I guess, for lack of a better word, of, you know, like, I think it'd be something along the lines of, like, you know, kind of letting people know, like, who you are, like, give good, like, you know, talking about other things, but, kind of made me privy to, you know, being a little more anecdotal in my comedy. So it was a nice piece of advice, and I appreciate
that. Thank you. Yeah, it does annoy me when people, I remember now, when people talk about movies, then it's like, oh, this movie, this happened. Did you work on them? No, don't talk about it. Because I just feel like, you know, it's like everyone liked that movie. That movie is a movie. You're doing stand-up now. Talk about you. Like, you know what I mean? My mom did this. My aunt did this. My little cousin did this. I got a swirly in high school. To me, like, personal experiences that are true. Now, I lied a bunch on stage tonight. I told a bunch of lies. But they were jokes, and they weren't about... I also feel like if you talk about a movie, there's a bundle of information that's outside of the performer that you're referencing. But, you know, a joke is like set up, punch. All the information is here. A movie's out there.
Right.
Your jokes are right here of what you're saying. So, anyway. I hope that helped. I don't want to be the comedy police. A couple people are like, oh, you're the comedy police. You do this. I try to be nice, but I'll tell you one part. I don't want to name names or say too much, but I got mad at somebody who was using stage time. Now, comedy is like my religion and my political party and my everything. Like, you know, comedy I take very seriously. And a comic was using stage time recently to ask for cigarettes the whole time. And then as soon as their whole set was asking for cigarettes and then walked right off stage and asked me for cigarettes. And I lost my fucking mind. I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
So.
How long were they doing that for?
At the end of their set, like the last 2 minutes was asking for cigarettes.
I gotcha.
And it's just like, I don't know what you're doing. Go get cigarettes. You didn't even show up with jokes. Show up with cigarettes and jokes next time.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're doing. I don't know. How have you felt about you're in the scene for like a year or so? How long have you been doing stand-up?
I started about 2 years ago. I started in July of 2018, but I really didn't. Like, I did my first set at Q's Mike at the Scarlet Pub. That was a great time. So that was my first time ever doing stand up. And then
do you want this?
Oh yeah, sure. Thank you. And then I went to my friend lives out in LA, so I spent like about a week and a half with him, and I managed to find an open mic at a coffee shop in North Hollywood, and I went there and, you know, went up in front of like, you know, five or six people, including the guy making the coffee. And then I really didn't get into like the scene, I would say, until about like September of 2018. That was when I found the Brighton. That was when I found, you know, like the Anchor's Bend and the Asbury Hotel. They had a variety mic going on over there, so I went there. Just kind of asked around, like Blackthorn up in Kenilworth, and just pretty much, you know, just like talked to people. Everyone was super helpful, just kind of like pointed me in the right directions. I was using Google for the most part. I don't remember. I think it was like Bad Slava was that website.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I found that, and then by the time I got to Blackthorn, which was like my third mic, I just started asking around people, and everyone started like, you know, pointing me in the right direction. And you know, it's been pretty much every week. I think, like, you know, the only times I've ever really like missed weeks was like in the very beginning, and then pretty much like every week since then. And even, you know, coming back when we started doing the Brighton again in June, I've been there pretty much every week. I had to quarantine for a little bit because I had to go down to South Carolina for like a family thing, so, you know, I quarantined for a little bit. But other than that, yeah, I've been, you know, mostly like in Jersey.
And the trouble with doing the Brighton every Monday, which I've been doing too, is like I've been really like, oh man, I did these jokes last week, so now I can't do them this week, and like, so it's made me write. When you do the same place all the time, you can't do the same jokes every time. So that was why we were both like, oh good, we're at the Weed Man's Joint, let's just do old jokes, our best jokes here.
Yeah.
So that we're not burning the same jokes in front of the same people every week, you know?
Yeah, that's been like a fun challenge of like, you know, going to the Brighton every week and just trying to like come up with new stuff. Maybe I'll like cycle in something that I haven't done in a couple of weeks if I write something new to tag onto it.
Mm.
But other than that, like I've kind of just taken it as, you know, most of the spots are like a little far, so I've just been kind of using the Brighton as, you know, an incentive to write more and to just, you know, kind of like fatten it out. Plus I've been recording, like I got a new phone. Because my old phone, I literally couldn't have Facebook and YouTube on my phone at the same time. That's how little space I had, so I couldn't really. I had three recorded sets in a year and a half of stand-up. So since I've been back, I've recorded every single set that I've been able to do. So I've actually been able to go in and study the tones and, you know, the certain ways that, you know, maybe I'll speed things up a little more when I should have slowed them down. Like, I can actually look at it under a microscope, whereas before I didn't really have, you know, the resources to do that.
The comics been cool to you? Has there been any like clicks that you feel like you can't get inside? Like, are you the outsider looking in, or how have you felt? Like,
I've always kind of taken it as like a individual by individual basis. I can't name any like negative experiences I've had with everybody. Any person that I've ever struck up a conversation with, no matter who it's been, has always been, you know, nice and, you know, just like hanging out conversational. And yeah, I don't really see, you know, like there's groups of friends. Like I was in drama club in high school, so there was like, you know, the tech people and the actors. But, you know, if you like went up to one of the actors, they weren't like, you know, oh, like, how dare you kind of cross that line. So, and I've kind of had the same experience doing comedy. Like no matter who I go up and talk to, I've had like nice experiences.
Yeah, yeah. Did I come up to you unsolicited and give you unsolicited advice, or did I say, you know, did you say, oh, hey, what about my act? And I said, oh, let me think about this.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I don't really ask for advice, but I do welcome it. So it's like, and it was like kind of, you know, I think you were like walking to the bathroom. I was like sitting in the back and, you know, just kind of like thinking about, you know, the set or whatever. So I think you just like kind of dropped by and was just like, you know, you gave that little, you know, piece of advice and then you walked off. But I always welcome advice. You know, I never take anything personally, even if like, you know, someone was like, oh, that sucked. Like, you know, I think it's all kind of, you know, it all helps if you kind of
I think we talked and you were like, oh, I've been doing it like for 3 months, and then I'm like, okay, I've been doing it for a lot. I'm not gonna be mean, I'm just gonna go, hey, try this, you know, because I used to talk about movies a lot, and I that kind of got whipped out of me by another comic, and I've always been like grateful for it, because I'm like, it does make me be more vulnerable, which I think if you're vulnerable and honest, then you're just more endearing.
Yeah.
And people like you better, you know?
It's also more, like, I've noticed in the time since that I've been, you know, going a little more anecdotal with my material, that it's been more fun, and I, like, connect to it more, and I can kind of, like, it's easier for me to act it out. Like, the one bit that that we were talking about, like, it was like a Star Wars bit, and I was doing like the Jar Jar Binks voice because I like doing different, you know, voices that stuff. But I've always kind of, you know, been of the opinion that I don't want to just go up there and kind of have like a party trick type of thing where I'm just like, and this is Jar Jar Binks at the such and such. Like, I wanted to have kind of like an outfitted, and that actually, when you were talking to me about that, that was before I'd kind of like attached more like comic material onto it, not just like the impression, like, because the bit before wasn't just the impression, but it kind of was, like, it was kind of buried in just me being like, it could be easier interpreted as me just being like, oh, I'm just kind of like lousing up the proceedings for me to use this voice, and then I was able to kind of, you know, attach some other things onto it after.
We gotta keep it rolling. This man just interviewed Matt Nascimento for the Highway Diary podcast. Give it up for Eric Hollebach.
Thing remind me, I lived with a girl for 4 years, and I used to perform at the UCB, and I would like try my hardest. I had these great shows, and I would always go to the girl and say, how was it? She was like, it's okay. And then she would turn on dog videos on YouTube, and like, there was a dog that was like, the owner was like, are you hungry? The dog was like, I'm hungry. And she was like on the floor laughing, and I was like, what am I doing with my life? Like, nothing I can write is funnier than a dog going like, mama, mama, I want my mama. Funniest thing in the world. You know, I don't like social justice warriors. They're the worst. I don't know. I can't. There's so many genders they have. They're always changing. On Facebook, I just changed my gender to the people in the other room with expensive cutlery. That is officially my gender on Facebook. Because you can type in anything. I don't know. The people in the other room with expensive cutlery. And if you misgender me, I'm being oppressed right now. Social justice warriors, it's just like white guilt Dungeons and Dragons. It's like, oh yeah, my gay goth cousin was fat shamed. Give me 300 sympathetic Instagram followers, thank you. Oh yeah, my Native American adopted grandma just changed her gender to a bat. If I don't get Twitch likes, I'm gonna kill myself. It's just my social credit score is going up because I'm different than everybody. Oh my God. There's a internet conspiracy that Michelle Obama's a man called Michael Yvonne. Have you seen this? Michael Yvonne. There's like pictures of them in high school together with Barack Obama and Michael Yvonne. And I didn't believe it until she was dancing on Ellen one time. She was wearing puffy pants, and there was some kind of pendulous apparatus flapping around. And I'm recording the set right now. I want to be on the record. If she is a man and it's hard in front of me, I will suck it. Will that get me Obamacare? I will suck Michael Yvonne's cock live on primetime TV to completion if the conspiracy is real. I'm putting my money where my mouth is, okay? Just for the story. I mean, the story.
When we last left off.
Oh, yeah.
When we last left off, you know, we were talking about Matt Nascimento's, you know, kind of spiral towards alcoholism or his spiral out of it. But we didn't really speak to
the rock bottom. The catalyst moment kind of turned the tide.
So, in the week before the rock bottom, what was going on in your life, if you catch what I'm saying?
So I was basically, I mean, like, I think a more telling time period for that would be I had tried to quit drinking. I was in an intensive outpatient program for, I was going like 4 days a week, 3 days a week. I didn't really have much intention to quit, but my parents were, you know, starting to get a little concerned. My girlfriend at the time was starting to, you know, get a little concerned, and they kind of, you know, they basically teamed up to like help me, you know, to help me see what the destructive nature of my behavior. So the catalyst that kind of, and I'd put together some like 90 days or whatever, and I relapsed by just, you know,
not really having a very strong resolve. I just kind of saw an opportunity to slip. I took it, and it ended up being the tip of an iceberg type of thing.
So then what brought you to the rehab? Your parents kind of forced you into that outpatient?
Force would be, you know...
Strongly suggested?
Strongly suggested. They gave me every opportunity to suggest better alternatives. It's not really in their way to kick me out, but they weren't going to be, they weren't going to let themselves kind of, you know...
Enable.
Yeah, and just kind of like harbor what was to eventually become a potentially fatally destructive, you know, trajectory of where mm-hmm. everything was going. So after the intensive outpatient, you know, seemingly worked, I had relapsed. And then my girlfriend at the time, she broke up with me, rightly so. I mean, you know, it was very difficult on her, and I don't, like, hold it against her at all. But I kind of used that as, like, my excuse of, like, oh, I'm heartbroken, and I'm drinking all the time.
Right.
So that went on for about, like, 2 to 3 months of just, like, you know, drinking a bunch, going out and blacking out places. And that was kind of, like, where a lot of that, like... the destructive nature of the alcoholism took place. Before I tried to stop at the IOP, it was like I had had some episodes. I had a nice small catalog of episodes that were like red flags, but then they started to get a little like, you know.
Then you would drink to blackout every time. Like you, there was no off mechanism. You would just go until full.
Well, that coma. Was like I never enjoyed blacking out, but I just kept drinking. Yeah. It just, you know, I never really saw any reason to stop, and I would just always cross over into that blackout territory.
Mm.
And then waking up the next morning and just being like, you know, I got to go through and see who do I got to apologize to, who do I got to, you know, just like kind of take the inventory of like how I'd fucked up. And that feeling would normally wear off depending on the severity of the situation, maybe anywhere between like 4 days to like that next night.
Mm-hmm.
Of just being like, all right, well, you know, I've shaken it off, I've reconciled with myself, and I'm going to, you know, start to boogie again.
So you did 4 months of the outpatient, then you went on like a 2 month bender.
More or less, yeah, that took me to, and then that took me to the last week, because technically my sobriety date from alcohol was, it was about 5 days before I went away to rehab, and I, you know, I took my mom's bike out because I took my dad's bike out and they chained the bike up. I didn't have car privileges. So yeah, I took my mom's bike out. I was riding around. I rode to a corner liquor store, bought myself some shit and just like kept drinking. And then by the next day it was like, all right, we got to like be serious about, you know, about an inpatient. So I was fairly resistant to the idea. They had someone reach out and call me and speak to me about, you know, wanting to go away. And I basically like I tried to be polite, but at the same time it was more of like a no thanks, like I think I could figure this out on my own. And to my surprise, they didn't really try to convince me otherwise. They were like, we can't, we are not people that, we're not coming to your house. This is like every single person that's here is here on their own free will.
Mm.
So like we're not gonna, you know, like we're not here to persuade you. We're here for you. Like, we have a bed open for you,
mm-hmm.
if you so choose. So then I was given another 2 days by my dad to decide, like, you know, feel free to come up with any idea that you want. And if it holds up. And I didn't come up with anything. So then I kind of, like, resigned to the idea of going to the 30-day program. And then the rock bottom was the first full day of being there. And thankfully, I kept a journal with me. So I was able to actually write out the rock bottom, like, as it was happening. And I go back and I read it every so often whenever I feel like I need to recalibrate my resolve. Not that I've ever thought about going back to drinking, because the experience itself lives very fresh. But, you know, to read it, it's a very cathartic.
So when you went in there, it was like, oh, my life is over. Like, I can't control myself. I ended up in some sort of, like, jail.
Yeah, I was like, ah, fucking loser, piece of shit, like, I just, like, I let my parents down, I'd, you know, betrayed the trust of my friends, and just, you know, kind of lost the respect of those around me that I'd really, you know, that I'd loved for forever, and, you know, I felt like there was a lot of, you know, just despair and hopelessness. But by the end of that rock bottom was kind of followed by a, like, I'm not going to take this lying down and I'm going to, you know, fight it with everything I got. So, and that led to those 30 days being like, I listened in on every meeting. I didn't get involved in all the politics of the community of, you know, certain people are arguing with this person. This person's, you know, got romantic interests in this person. Like, you know, one of my friends that I made in there, he was like, because there was a whole bunch of, like, you know, romance and affairs going on.
Oh, AA drama.
Oh, yeah,
as the emotionally unstable people were kind of trying to bind their substance abuse, but they still needed some kind of drama, some kind of party to shake up their emotions.
Yeah, I mean, sex is the only drug you're really getting in rehab.
Right,
Unless you're lucky to encounter anyone that snuck anything in, which, you know, I mean, it happened once, but I don't really know much about that. It was a funny type of thing that happened. But he was like, when we were talking about the romance thing, he was like, dude, nobody's finding a fucking Ferrari in the scrapyard. Like, we're all just in this fucking place. And I put two and two together. Yard. Basically, yeah. And he was reading this big Steve Jobs biography, and I was like, "That's why you got that big fucking book in here." He's like, "I'm just in here minding my own business, and you know,
just do the work. Just show up and do the work. Don't no drama."
Yeah, yeah. Because it adds to the, you know, one of the things I talk about in recovery is in the fourth step you take a mental inventory, and one of the lists that you write is a list of your resentments. And the way I was taught it, it's like people, ideas, and institutions. And you write out, even if it's the person that cut you off in traffic, like you cleanse yourself of like all these names, and then you write out, you know, however long you feel necessary to, you know, to explain and to expand on like why you have this like resentment. And there are other parts of that step, but in the resentments phase of it, you know, there's no reason to kind of, you know, you still got to reconcile within that resentment you have for yourself, and just kind of coming to terms with, you know, what brought you there. Because I mean, addiction's a motherfucker. Like it has these different ways of.
I feel like I have a lot of those as you're speaking. I'm like, man, I could write a goddamn huge list. And I love drama. I love knowing who I don't like and why. Mm-hmm. Is that bad?
No, I don't think it's bad. I you know, I think like it's part of human nature. So, like, when you have something as, like, you know, as serious and urgent as addiction, it'll kind of amplify those human qualities to kind of throw them out as distractions.
Mm.
And that's why they really discourage, you know, dating and fraternizing, especially in the early stages of recovery, because it's like, you got to figure out, like, what's going on with you, and if you let other things kind of take the reins on that, like, it's so easy to coast off into that shit.
Mm. So it's like, no, it's not about my sobriety. That's not the problem. It's like Kimberly. So I was supposed to go to the pasta restaurant with her. Then she got a message about her mom, and then this and that. And it's like, you know, that can derail you.
Yeah. And at that point, you've already missed like, you know, a week's worth of meetings, or even just missing a day. Like in the beginning, like I went every day for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's like, you know, to me, it was very important. I keep it very, like, subjective because, you know, not everybody has, like, the same experience in those rooms and stuff. And
what were some of those resentments? Like, you know, when you were drinking to blackout, was there a particular resentment or a feeling of inadequacy, or what was sort of the driver, you think?
I think I've always, like, struggled with like anxiety and low self-confidence, and alcohol was kind of one of those things that kind of padded that room up a little bit. But in the moment, I was always of the mind that like, it's just fun. Like I just enjoyed getting drunk. I enjoyed, you know, that like, no matter how gross the alcohol was. And by the end of it, it was just Laird's vodka, which is like the grossest. It's basically gasoline. And, mm-hmm. Like 427 for like a fifth of it. And I just enjoyed that, like, that griminess of just drinking it and then going into the, you know, just going into the great beyond of, like, I just enjoyed the feeling of being drunk, kind of like, you know, like a heroin addict enjoys the feelings of shooting up. Like, it was, and I know that there were the deep
psychological workings like underneath it, which in the years since I've been able to kind of identify and slowly, like, you know, patch back up. But alcohol was just fun to be like, oh, y'all shut the fuck up tonight. I'm going out and I'm going to have fun. And whether or not I hit the mark is a matter of degree, but, you know, it was just like, it was fun in the attempt. But when I realized what it was doing, it was just dangerous.
You guys ever see a 6 foot tall Brazilian woman kick a midget in the balls across a room? And I can say that because I'm Brazilian. I love porn, man. I love porn and I love weed, and I mixed the two together one time. I got a really strong edible from a friend of mine, and I found myself at the Exotica porn convention. Just went by myself, just cold called, approached, walked in, higher than I'd ever been, paranoid as fuck. I don't even know about what. But I was walking in there and I saw all these, like, these beautiful women and these creepy dudes that I was definitely more than qualified to be in their company of. But I was walking around and I saw these beautiful women and I was like, man, I haven't been in a room with this many people that I've jerked off to since my high school graduation. And I felt right at home all over again. But I saw a friend of mine there. He was like working, it was like a vape type of thing. And the weed was kicking in, the paranoia was getting really bad. He puts his arm around me and he takes out his phone and he throws up Snapchat and he's like, hey, what's up everybody? I'm with my boy Matt Nascimento at the Exotica Convention of 2018. And I was just like, man, do you mind like not posting that? And then a pink-haired porn star named Annabelle Peaks just looked at me and was like, ugh. And I've jerked off to her enough times to where that really hurt my feelings. I mean, I still do it, but, you know, those POV videos don't really sit right after you've actually looked into her eyes and she's just, you just have that look of disapproval.
You know, I don't really ever think about, like, oh, maybe when I'm older one day I'll go back to it. Because that was what slipped me up the first time. Mm. After I did the IOP, I was like, yeah, when I'm like 40, you know, some kind of career, family, whatever, I'll have a beer. And as soon as I cracked the lid off that jar, within 2 days, I'd found myself some booze again. So I'm just like, all right, I got to sit this one out, you know, like maybe in the next life type shit, like, you know, whatever. Like, I'm just not really focused on like Matt Nascimento ever getting drunk again. Mm. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. And I've been able to make peace with, like, you know, I've been able to find real confidence in other things that I wouldn't have been able to find confidence with if I had just used alcohol as that, you know, as that, like, quote unquote solution, for lack of a better term.
No, I drink, I do stand up, and a lot of what you're saying, I'm like, man, if resentments fuel alcoholism, boy, I got kerosene in my veins. Can I tell you about the text messages I was sending my mom today?
Yeah, sure.
Bro, can I tell you something? I'm moving to Austin February 1st of next year. And oh, so nice. I've been fucking working every day with no breaks. No breaks. I haven't had a break in like 2 weeks, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm like a little on edge because it's like every day it's like, oh, I put $15 in my savings account. Fucking $12 in my savings account. You know what I mean? Well, my mom, she says, oh, you know, my birthday was, I turned 31 Halloween, you know?
Nice.
I'm sorry. I turned 35 on October. October 31st.
Gotcha.
And my mom's like, oh, honey, you know, I'll send you a birthday card and I'll put some money in it.
Is your mom Jewish?
No, she's just from Jersey. Oh, okay. She sounds like that, though.
Is she, like, born and raised in Jersey? She got, like, Brooklyn she's or like, Staten Island in her?
No,
or?
She's hardcore. Westfield. Jersey.
Oh, okay, so like North Jersey.
Yeah, accent. Yeah. Oh, I'll send you some money in a card. It'll be lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, oh, geez, if she gives me $100, maybe I could take a day off. That'd be nice. And like, you know what I mean? Just like, honestly, unwind, because I'm like really stressed out trying to make, you know, I have like $1,000. I think I need like $1,500, you know, anyway. My life is like not, I don't have a lot of wiggle room for a lot of bullshit.
Right.
So she goes, you know, she was, last week she was wondering if I'm going to take my dresser. She gave me a dresser. Mm-hmm. And she's like, are you taking that to Austin? Or what are you going to do with the dresser? So I say, Mom, you have hoarded yourself to where you have a storage facility in Pennsylvania. And now you live in Florida and you're asking me about a dresser. And then she goes, I couldn't care less about the dresser. I'm worrying about other issues. I go, I couldn't care about your worries. She goes, forget it. Don't call me then. I go, I'm mildly interested in encouragement, but I don't get that from you. And she goes, I'm always in your corner. And I go, so keep your worries the hell away from me. And they only induce anxiety. You don't send me a dollar for my birthday, and now you want to call me to worry on me? It's not helpful. And she goes, oh, you got your card? And I go, yeah, a month ago. It was, oh, so she sent me a card. There's no money in it, but it said, this is redeemable for a steak dinner in Florida. So, like, if I visit her, she'll give me a steak dinner.
She wants to take that detour.
You know, and it's like, she, and then so I go, and she goes, oh, I didn't know you were so entitled for money. I thought you would just be happy getting a card from me. And I go, entitled? You call me to tell me you're sending me a birthday card with money, but you're incapable of even a petty generosity. And then you want to call me with a bucket of worries. I haven't had a day off in 12 days. I'm saving for my move. You know?
It just sounds like she misses you.
I know, but she wants to call me and worry. The thing is, you know what I mean?
Bother. Yeah, especially like New Jersey. Like, my parents are like Brooklyn, Staten Island, Jersey.
But so I want to call with a list of worries. And that's what triggers me. It's like, can you like send me an... I would call my mom if she goes... Eric, first of all, my stand-up special has been out since August. She hasn't watched it. Mm. You know, as she said she was going to send me $10. She's incapable of this. You know what I mean? Like, to take money out of her bank account, it's like, I don't know how to work this. It's like, yes, you did. First of all, you know, she has $500,000 cold in her bank account. She has a pension coming in. Her boyfriend bought her a house in Florida, so she has no living expenses. Mm-hmm. Hey, can I have $10 for my birthday? I don't know how to work this ATM. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You pretend you don't know how to use a bank because you're pathologically cheap. So it's like I just feel like she like is like, here's how you raise a kid. You put 3 spoonfuls of worry, and then you put the helpful jar away, and then you shake and you pour. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like this is not helpful. You to call me to... with your anxiety about my move to Austin is completely not helpful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like there's a conflicting thing of, like, the old school parenting of, like, I would just kick him out of the nest and he'll, like, be fine. But then there's also, like, the neuroticism of, like, oh, but I just got to call him to check up on him. So it kind of feels like it's, like, straddling the fence a little bit.
Yeah, but it's like, you know...
But it doesn't point in one direction definitively. Like, it kind of, like, it crisscrosses a little bit.
But there's not even, it's not helpful. It's her, I console her through my move when I'm worried about it. I'm worried about it, you know? And so, it's like, then she's gonna come up with, like, all these different, well, what if you meet a vagabond on your way there? You know, like, I don't need to think about anything like that. You know what I mean? And then it's like, I don't know, but it's control without the listening. Mm. It's the worry without the help. I don't know. I love my mom. I want to say this, you know, I'm shitting on her. I love her, but it's like, you know, I think my life is just so hard in these next 2 months before I move. I have to be so disciplined. I have to save so well. I have to work so hard. And I have, like, no free time except for this podcast and doing the couple little stand-up shows that I've already scheduled out, like, each one I'm going to do before I move, which is, like, mostly the Brighton Bar and a couple other places. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so I feel like I'm in a pressure cooker. And my mom thinks that that you love with worry. Oh, I'm worried about you, but don't you know I care?
That is an old worry? School form and it's like, of expressing no. love.
See, this, exactly, this induces anxiety. Yeah. Her worry makes me anxious, and it makes me unconfident. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't know. In the past, she's given me money for moves, but then she asked for it back when I was filming my special. So it's like, you know, I was like filming my special and she asked for like $1,200 back when she has like half a million in the bank. And then she's like, I'm worried about you. It's like, well, can you just let the $1,200 debt erase because you're fine?
Yeah.
But it's like, she's like, when it comes to money and objects, like she gave me a dresser, you know, and it's like, she's worried about if I'm going to get rid of the dresser or not. And it's like, she has a storage facility in Pennsylvania. And I know, like, you know, when she dies in Florida, not only is the Florida house going to be floor to ceiling with bullshit. So like, you know, imagine, you know, it would be very upsetting if my mother died, but,
of course.
She has a, then I got to go to Florida. Now I got to go to Pennsylvania for the storage unit. And it's like, can you leave Chotskys in every state, please? Can you open up more storage facilities and put more bullshit in them?
She wants to send you on a little adventure.
Right? I know. And it's like, you don't send me a $10 for my fucking birthday. But now after you die, I got to go all around the world. And
like at each location, there's just going to be a scroll that's just like giving you a clue to the next location. It's like, but you can't go to that one until you go to this one.
Like a Jersey squirrel.
Yeah, yeah.
Like after I get to the end of Labyrinth of Boxes, he's like, oh, so, you know, now you have to go to Massachusetts because there's all the Christmas presents in Massachusetts.
You didn't step on the green box, did you? Oh, I hope you didn't step on the green. I like the green box.
That one's filled with Slinkies. Now you got to pass the green box of Slinkies down for five generations and this and that. It's like, ugh.
Damn. How long you been planning this this move?
Maybe like it's been an amorphous plan, but the date's been in place for like maybe 9 months.
Oh, cool.
But at first I wanted to move there with my friends from my special, Kyle Smith and Thomas Jones. Kyle Smith just signed a lease in Houston. Thomas Jones I can't get a hold of. He knows I want to do this, but I think he's staying in New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
So then the plan was to get an RV and to you know, because I found, you know, in Jackson, New Jersey, someone was selling an RV for like $1,200.
That's not bad.
And it was like nice with a shower, everything. And I was like, damn, I could live in this thing. It's like a one bedroom apartment on wheels. And, you know, I can just like fill up the propane and do the water like every so often and stuff. But then my buddy CJ Kelly and I were just on the phone last week and I got him to commit. So we're going to get a two bedroom apartment outside of the University of Texas Austin, and you know, and it's gonna be like $700, $650 for a two bedroom. So we'll just split that and live nice and cheap.
Like $700 each?
No, for the whole thing.
Holy shit!
I know, dude. And it all happened. So, you know, when I filmed my special, I drove from LA to New Orleans to New York, and the best shows were at this place called the Cold Town Theater. And after the specials all got edited together, I sent them finished on YouTube links to, by the way, check out Conspiracies and Dick Jokes, Fart Porn and Beer Halls, and It's a Medical Device, free on YouTube. The Cold Town Theater has a Twitch stream that they've been playing comedy shows on during the COVID-19 pandemic because they've been closed. And they've been playing Fart Porn and Beer Halls a lot on their private Twitch because the closing joke takes place in the Cold Town Theater. And I killed that show. It was like the best show of the whole tour.
Nice.
And as a result, they offered me a show like once a week. But they said, hit us up in January. But I'm a little worried that they're closed permanently or they're switching ownership now. You know, there's a lot of fucking nonsense going on.
A lot of variables.
Yeah, so it's like a moving target, but that's the overall plan. And yeah, just with how cheap apartments are, like me and CJ, crazy. If we split that, we can afford it no problem. But again, it's not just the rent, it's the move. I gotta get a U-Haul. I'm going to put stuff on an Amtrak train and then drive there and then meet it there. So there's a couple moving parts, but that's general. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
If I have anxiety, if I have neediness, if I have mental problems, if I drink a lot, you know, it's not that hard to find out why exactly, you know.
I mean, you're lucky though, because I mean, like, it's kind of one of the things I learned from just like my experience of stopping drinking and kind of learning about recovery and addiction and all that, like, you kind of know if you've, if your card's been stamped with that, like, you got yourselves a problem thing, like, you know, like, and I, one of the things I try to stress to people, and I made this very clear to my friends early on, like, I don't have any, like, judgment, not that you need my permission or any of that bullshit, but, like, I don't take other people's inventory, like, I have friends that, like, get too drunk. I have friends that get too drunk often. I have friends that are just, you know, like, I know people, and they, like, they'll be like, oh, I'm an alcoholic, like, I'm this and that. Like, if your life's in danger, like, I'm always, like, I always make myself, I always make it known that I'm available as a resource. If you ever really feel like you need, like, I'm not the most qualified person to give, like, the advice, but I'm the only one out of my friends that's actually, like, been through it and come out on, like,
see,
the other side.
It is interesting, because I do like booze, but when you describe that every time you drink to blackout, that is not, that does not describe, like, you like, know, I definitely have a shutoff. I'm like, okay, I'm good, let me switch to water now. So
yeah, like, I was, like, drink to get high, basically. Like, yeah, it was, it felt more like a high than, and that's why, like, that was one thing when I was away in rehab, like, I was, like, most of the people I met there were, like, there for drugs. And right. I was, like, if I ever got into, like, any of those fucking, like, you know, heroin or pills or anything, like, I'd be dead 18 times over. Mm. Like, I'm lucky that it just stopped at alcohol. Like, I've never tried cocaine in my life. I've never tried, like, you know, any of those crazy types of pills or heroin or any, like, you know, I've experimented with, I've done acid a couple times, mushrooms. Like, this is a fun time. But, like, those ones where you can, you know, really, like, where it could, where it can go left really fast. Like, I, if I ever tried those, like, like, it's kaputs.
But,
like,
but your drink was vodka. You would just get handles of vodka and take those?
I would drink anything. Like, I was, like, a dumpster when it came to, but vodka became the only thing that I could afford. Because I was, like, I was smoking shit tons of cigarettes and, you know, just poor management of money. I wasn't making that much money. I was working at a Wawa at the time. Right, so, like, right. It's not like I'm really making money to, you know, like, ball out and get myself, like, I mean, if I had the money to get, like, fucking Patron or, like, Black Label, like, I would drink anything you gave me. From Laird's Vodka all the way to the top shelf. But it just became a matter of accessibility. Like, yeah, like, let's just get a pint of gasoline and, you know, see where.
Yeah, so to get, and did you find that, like, it was progressive? So, like, the gasoline was the only thing that would get you?
Oh, anything would get me. But the gas was, like, you know, like, the Laird's was just, like, you, it's gonna suck. Like, that, or, like, Steel Reserve, like, the 40 ounces. Like, I fucking love those. Like, those, like, me and my friends used to, like, tape them on our hands, like way back in the day when I was, like, still on the par of, like, you know.
And then first one to pee yourself loses?
No, it was just, like, we would just drink them. And then we would, like, watch Cops. But then we, like, couldn't find the remote, so we called our friend who, like, never drank at all. And we were like, yo, like, you want to hang out with us? And he'd get to the house, and he'd know what was going on, like, 5 minutes in. We're we need you to work the remote. We need you to work the remote. And he would just hang out, watch Cops with us. Like, this is a friend that I've known for most of my life. He's never drank or, like, done drugs. And he's, like, one of my favorite people. And you wouldn't know, like, he doesn't make that about his personality. And even if he did, I don't think it would take anything away from it. But, like, you just, like, I'm, and now that I'm kind of on the other side of it, like, you know, I smoke weed every now and again when I'm not on probation, but, like, you know, I'll, like, see him at a party or something when, like, we're all with our friends, and I'm just like, man, like, it means so much more now to, like, have him, and I can kind of, like, see and appreciate, like, the annoyingness that I used to think that he had to put up with, but at the end of the day, I realized, like, no, because it was just, like, I love my friends. And he had that same, like, approach to it. Granted, every once in a while, it'd be like, hey, drive us to McDonald's at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning. He's like, I'm not doing that. Like, you guys, like, figure it out. Just raid the pantry and, you know, eat a bag of peanuts or whatever. Like, you know, but it was, like, stuff like that, experiences like that.
So how'd you have legal problems? You didn't say anything about that in the...
Oh, yeah, I got arrested back in February. I was on my way home from an open mic, my first open mic in Jersey City, my first time ever in Jersey City. I was cutting through East Brunswick at about, like, 1 o'clock in the morning, got pulled over. I had a blunt in, like, stashed into my door. I didn't smoke anything that day because, like, at the start of 2020, I was like, all right, I'm not getting high before I go on stage anymore. I got to keep, like, I'm not one of those types of people that can smoke and get loose and go up on stage and have, you know, and have like a good set. Like I would rip a vape pen like 80 million times, go up on stage, forget what my name is, and usually just like not have a very good go of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to notice, like, you know, if I hold off on smoke until the end of the night, then it's like not only is it a reward, but I can actually be more present in my comedy and in my stand-up. And I kind of saw that as like taking a step in the right direction. But I had the blunt waiting for me, and it was in my car like an idiot. The cop pulled me over, and he was like, he said he smelled weed in the car. My front driver's side window works, so we had to like open up the passenger side door as they walk around to the other side. So he was like, I smell weed in the car. I didn't smoke anything that day or like the day before, but I wasn't going to tell him he was lying because there was weed in the car. So, he found weed in the trunk. And then that was that. I had to do the whole, legal, get myself a lawyer, all that stuff. It was the first time I ever got arrested before. So then, at like the end of July, we did a Zoom court date.
Ugh, such bullshit. And they just fucking legalized it, so it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. So, when you had that list of resentments, now, I don't need you to name names necessarily, but it seems right. like your family has been, like, super supportive, and you have a good family and good upbringing. What was your, the low self-esteem, what was that, the resentments and the low self-esteem. Did you blame other people for your low self-esteem and your list of resentments on step four?
No, that was pretty difficult to like, there's like, so the three lists is like names, ideas, and institutions. Like the ideas and institutions list were really easy to write. Cause I was just, but like the names of like people, like I've never really been the type to like I don't hold grudges. I don't really like, it takes a lot for someone to kind of be on my shit list. And if you ask me my shit list, like I don't really have one. Like I don't really feel like that kind of way about people. And the whole like low self-esteem, I've been trying to figure that out, where that comes from, for a while, and I'm still kind of like searching for it. So the resentments wasn't really so much of, because I talked about it with my sponsor, and he was like, you don't have to, if just because you name someone on that list doesn't mean that you resent that person. You might just have one story that, that you just need to get off your chest, and it doesn't change the way you feel about them. It doesn't change the way that, like it could be a person who has like a positive role in your life. And he was like, I usually don't have to do this, but like, if you're telling me that there aren't really that many like people on it, like then we'll crack into that next one. Because usually the case is like, I got a fucking whole list of names. Like
that's I live like that with like laundry baskets.
Right. Yeah. So like I had to kind of go a little deeper, and
it's more of a self-hatred with you.
Yeah. It's always kind of been that. Like I internalize like when negative things happen, I'm usually the first person. Not like. I'm usually like the first person to blame if like something bad happens. I don't really like, I don't blow up on people. I don't really like,
did do that, even if that has nothing to do with you. You take blame
Of. I've gotten better with that, but yeah, for a long time it was like, I wouldn't really, I always had like issues like standing up for myself, because there weren't really that many instances where I had to. So, like, because I would just hang out with my friends and, I had issues with certain people when I was younger, but, they weren't really, like, traumatizing in any way. Like, I couldn't even remember those names to, like, put on that resentments list. You know what I mean? Like, I was never really, like, a confrontational type of person. But as I got older and started dealing and, more mature, like, getting into arguments in a relationship, I kind of had to come to terms with like, yeah, maybe I am a little combative sometimes, or maybe I am a little like, or not so much combative as I am like defensive. Like I'll like try to back up a point, and then I realize like, oh, like, just trying to like find those grounds. But I kind of lost the origin of the question.
Oh, your list of resentments, step four.
Yeah, it was tough, like trying to figure out like, people, and it ended up just being like, I have like this issue, because if it was something that I was able to think about and remember, then it was worth writing down. So like there's like, the people that are on that list, like, they're in great company. And, like, it's not, I don't think that they're bad people or anything. It was just, like, I had to get something out there. So it was, like, you know, maybe it was a way to kind of, like, you know, dig into other things and try to, you know, maybe be like, oh, like, maybe I actually do feel some type of way about, like, this person.
Yeah. I got no problem, you know, we could look at the list at the Brighton Bar today, and I could go through with full clarity of ways in which I've been wrong. No, I'm just joking. I love most of the people here. But I did get into it with Johnny Hollywood on Facebook the other day, and I really don't like that person.
I got in a fight with Johnny Hollywood on Facebook. I don't know why. He posted, small businesses are going down. They're going down during this lockdown. And so I'm a cunt, you know. So I replied on the Facebook thing. I think Comedy Cove has always been shit because of your cunty attitude, you dick. I've never seen you be nice to anybody ever. Like, I don't know. One time I went there, and I went to record my set. I have a camcorder that's 4K. He has one that's HD. And he's like, I'm like, can I record my set? He's like, no, you gotta buy it from me. Like, he's the fucking mob. Like, he's the mafia. He's like, no, I'm the only one who could film here. I'm the only one. If you need a tire, you gotta buy it from me. If you need tile work, you gotta buy it from me. I'm like, this guy sucked. I'm just gonna start recording and try and stop me. And then I was like, I'm gonna ask the host of the show. He's like, okay, you can record. I'm like, you're the biggest fucking dick in the world.
And I'll tell you why on stage.
I've only met him once, so I don't really have any
trash.
I don't have anything to say
trash
about.
But what I will say is, check out Matt Nascimento. He's one of the good ones in New Jersey. He's you know, new to the game, but he's coming up strong, and he's improving rapidly. So I'm a big fan of him. Any plugs? How can people find you?
Matt Nascimento 1 on Instagram. I don't really post that often, but if I do, you'll be there if you follow that. I think it's like Matt period Nascimento or Matt dash Nascimento.
He's got a low self-esteem. He comes onto the room like a silent fart, you know, just, oh, now he's here. You know what I mean? He just kind of creeps up on you. But this guy's creeping up on the comedy scene in a big way. Let's go do some stand-up.
Cool, man. All right. Yeah, thanks for letting me do this and having me on.
All right, no problem. Later.